Welcome to the Hip Hop Digest interview series. It's your man, DJ King Killer.
Forget about your boy, Kurt G.
And of course, it's E Color. And we are honored here tonight to have one of the greatest dudes from one of the greatest groups in hip hop history. That would be Stetsasonic. And we got Daddy-O on here for an interview. What's up, sir?
Peace, man. How y'all doing?
Oh, we good.
Good.
Very well.
Indeed.
Good.
So, it's an honor to have you on the show. I got to be honest, I'm sitting in here and I was just telling my man, you know, he's pulling out all the Stetsasonic vinyl, looking at the vinyl. It's like, wow. I was saying the first time that I seen you, me and my man E. Green seen you was 1988 on the Runs House tour at the Capitol Center. And that tour was absolutely crazy. I wonder if you got any memories from that.
You know, so crazy, man, is that I usually don't remember anything. Wise and Bobby is a lot better than that. Wise's memory is so crazy. I don't even know how he knows. He'll know colors and, you know, just random stuff, right? Wow. But Bobby is close. Like, Bobby's real close. But Bobby's a little bit more of the historian. Wise is just kind of the guy in the group that remembers. But I do remember the Cap Center. That's the ill part, is that I remember the Cap Center. Because I remember, you know, we learned from some really great people. And so watching all of our heroes as we was formulating and putting the band together, you know, there was certain things from people that we would see. So one of the things that we learned from, like, some of the larger, I guess you could call them R&B bands, but, you know, it's a little more than R&B. When you talk about Brass Construction, Mandrill, War, Earth, Wind, Fire. So that was kind of our idea of what we were doing when we was doing Stet, was, you know, kind of customizing shows. And so we knew D.C., had the go-go going on, and I remember preparing for that show.
Yes.
You know, I remember the intro. I remember how we came out.
Yes.
I remember the intro to that show. I remember so much about that show.
Yes.
Wow, that's crazy.
That is crazy, no doubt. No doubt. So you're obviously originally from New York City. What part of New York are you from?
I'm born and bred in Brooklyn, East New York.
Oh, okay. That's what's good, East New York. Who's from there? That J. Rue the Damager?
Yeah.
J. Rue from East New York. Uncle Murda from right there. Brownsville, East New York. Of course, Premier.
Right, no doubt.
Guru moved there. He was in Boston first, but then he moved there. Let me see, who else is East New York? All the Fat Boys. Me and the Fat Boys grew up around the corner from each other. Like,
oh,
as kids.
Oh, really? Wow.
Like, the next block. The next block is crazy.
Oh, M.O.P.?
No doubt.
Oh, yeah, M.O.P.
So I got a question.
M.O.P. is a little further down the hill, but in the area. They Ocean Hill, Brownsville, but they in the area.
All right.
The thing that came to mind, because when you said you were putting the band together, and I heard you talking about, you know, all the groups that you guys, you know, look to, but it's interesting that we don't hear anything about any bands anymore. I mean, maybe the Roots call themselves a band, but
yeah, the Roots are a band,
no doubt. So what institutes or what causes you to say a band versus a group?
Oh, it was really just one thing. I never wanted to have to go on stage and want for anything sonically.
Okay.
So I told the light, everybody that's playing on this record is in this group.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's what's good.
You know, I'm not doing work for hire. I'm not doing none of that because I'm not getting rid of nobody. And I know just from, you know, especially now, like I know now, really know, because I've ended up in the industry. I wasn't in the industry, but I still knew that people were like, you know, just growing up and watching bands around my way and all of that, know that, you know, people were interchanging, you know, guitar player get a gig somewhere else, he runs. You know, drummer get a gig somewhere else, he runs. And then, yeah, sometimes you can replace that guy. And yeah, sometimes the gig is just a horrible gig because you've been with this drummer for 6 months. Evelyn Champagne King calls him. He goes on the road with her. Now you got to get somebody else to come in. and learn all of stops and goes, intros, outros, all of those songs. And, you know, either you got to modify your show or you just don't have that much of a dynamic show. So I knew that I wasn't going to go through that. Like, I just knew I wasn't going to go through it. And I knew how I wanted everything to sound. And so as I was formulating Stetsasonic, all of these elements, I don't want to say they fell in my lap, but they kind of did. Like, you know, I'm doing this group and my man Daoud says, oh man, my brother makes music for the rappers. And so that's how DBC ends up getting in the group. You know, I go up to Middletown, New York and see him. He's got this wall of equipment. You know, I ain't never messed with a drum machine in my life. And I'm seeing him with all this stuff. I'm like, wow, you do all this stuff yourself? And he's like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, as we started doing things, I just say, yo, man, just put them in a group. Like, don't, you know. And so by the time we got done, me and Delight was looking at it and was like, yo, we got a band. Like, you know, it's a hip hop band, but we got a band. Like, you know, we ain't really doing the guitar thing, but look at this, look at that, look at this, look at that. So, you know, that was the whole premise. It was like, we was a performing act first, way before records. We were all about performance. And so when we did decide to record, I wanted to make sure that when I got on stage that you know, that I wasn't wanting for anything. There's even some tapes floating around. I could probably get y'all, because Paul sent me one. There's even some tapes floating around, like when we did WBLS, and we did, like, I mean, we were rappers, like we was a rap act, but we actually did one of those old school live in the studio shows. We did two of them. We did one with Mr. Magic, and then we did a full one at WNYU, where we took all of the equipment up to the radio station and performed inside the radio station.
Oh, that's wow. Got to be incredible.
Oh, man, I'd love to hear that.
It's got to be incredible. Indeed. So let me ask you, in Stetsasonic, do you have a particular favorite recording?
A particular what? I didn't hear that.
A particular favorite recording. Any, you know, Ghost, Stet, Sally.
You're talking about, because the guys, I can't really speak for the guys. I could say me. I could tell you what I like.
Well, what do you like?
I like, I think my favorite is We're the Band on Info Gear.
Mm.
I think, and then I think Neck and Neck to Where the Band comes, two songs, Stet Troop 88, which is also on Info Gear, and My Rhyme, which is on Fire.
Oh, okay.
Those are my favorite Stet records. Mm. And it's really My Rhymes that make them my favorite. Like, I think that's the best I've spit on those, on any record. I mean, I like what I did on other records, but that rhyme on Where the Band is ridiculous, yo, to me.
Oh, that's what's up.
Yeah, like, no, yo, that's crazy. Dude,
that don't hurt your shoulder, Pat.
Don't pat myself on the back on that one, but
yeah,
you know,
joint I'm crazy, yo.
No doubt.
That grandstand hip hop, that's the style. The style of the bold, the rare, the wild. Yo, that's a crazy rhyme, yo. I when I listen to it, I'll be like, yo.
Like, I did that? That was me?
Brooklyn bred, Long Island fed. Yo, that joint is crazy, yo.
Yo, you want to know what's funny? I'm going to tell you why I'm laughing. Because, you know, when we interviewed Steady B, MC Shy D, right?
Mm-hmm.
He totally was like doing the opposite of what you just did just now. It was just funny as hell to me how that works sometimes. But hey, you know, wow. It was fire. And he knows his wasn't, so that's what it is.
Right.
No doubt. I think the next thing I always wanted to know, I looked at your videos as far as Professor Daddy. I mean, really, you really are a historian of the culture.
Right.
And one of the things that I guess, there was a documentary called Founding Fathers. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I love it. Yeah, that's Sonny's joint. That's Hassan Poor's joint.
Yeah.
That's my man.
Yeah.
That's my man, Sonny.
So I was wondering what you thought about that, because as a person myself, I'm 48 years old. I mean, I really started DJing around like 84, whatever. But I didn't know about, you know, like I should have known about, you know, Pete DJ Jones. I should have known more about some of the DJs that were considered hip hop, even though it may not have been hip hop formulated at that time. seemed like to me in the documentary they were throwing a little bit of shade to Herc and a little bit of shade to Flash, but you know,
right.
I was wondering what you thought about that, because I myself think I should have known more about the guys who were DJing at that time. Because I know all the club DJs. I know the Larry Levans and the Nicky Cianos and the Tony Humphreys. I know them. Uh-huh. But I didn't know from the hip-hop side. I was wondering what you thought about that.
Well, you know, I'll say this as a disclaimer. My thought is not complete yet, but I'm about 80-85% there, right? So, a couple of things. One is, at best... And this is just Daddy-O talking. It's, you know, you could quote me because of your show, but you know, I'm not making my mouth some hip hop rule book. But at best, I guess that stuff could be called pre-hip hop. That would be my take on it. You know, I'm very familiar with those guys. I don't know if they mentioned the Kick and Coffin. I don't remember if they mentioned the Kick and Coffin in that.
Now, I don't remember the
documentary.
Yeah.
But Scooter and them, we remember because me and Bobby was talking about it, because Bobby told me that he got into a conversation with Herc, and him and Herc, you know, Herc felt a little something, like he felt some kind of way when Bobby was, because Bobby was saying, yo, in 72, I was in Brownsville in the hole, and I used to see Kick and Coffin. I used to see Scooter and them bring the coffin out. You know what I'm saying? And you was in Jamaica.
Right.
Mm. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, And so let me kind of give you my philosophy. I'm writing this book and trying to figure out whether or not I'm gonna put any autobiographical pieces in it. But I'm gonna do a book about hip hop. I think I got a working title, which is I forgot it, but it has something to do with James Brown. But anyway, I'll tell you why. Because I believe, and this is my philosophy, disco is the mother of hip-hop, reggae is the father of hip-hop, and James Brown is our godfather. And if you remember anything about godfathers, especially, I'm born in 61, so godfathers in the 70s, you always wanted to hang out with your godfather because he was the one that had the Cadillac and all of that. On top of that, parents always chose a godfather that, God forbid, anything happened to them. That would be the person to take over. And, you know, it's also the person, hey, he don't have enough money for his tuxedo for graduation. It's always your godfather that comes through, right? So that's the guy you hang out with to get all your cool from. Your mama usually gives you all of that everyday structure, which is the rhythm of disco, the break beats, all of that stuff we got from disco. Because, you know, you listen to Flash and them back in the day, and at 79, 78, you hear those tapes. You say, and we're going to rock this Sure Shot disco beat. You know, it's always, you know, because it was disco that Flowers, Pete DJ Jones, and all of them was playing, that those breaks was.
No doubt.
But it was Flash and Thid on them. Disco Twins a little bit. But it was Flash and Thid on them that really popularized that 3 second backspin. Even though the Twins was probably nicer than them technically. But they didn't popularize it the way Flash and them almost made it scientific, right? And then with Flash and Herc, I don't know where Theodore's from, but I know Flash and Herc are both of West Indian descent. They had all of that, what end up becoming the boom bap. You know, all that Studio One stuff that Toots and them was doing, that Bob Marley and the Wailers was doing, that, you know, Peter Tosh and Bunny and all of them was doing. So they had that little feet piece. And if you notice with your pops was always the guy in the, and I'm still talking 70s, your pops was the guy in the den with his record collection, right? And when, you know, when he felt good, you could come in there and put on the headphones and listen to his Coltrane or his Miles Davis, but he was always in a vibe, but he was always the guy with the solid answer on what music really was, right? And so that's what, you know, that's where we got all our styling from. You hear Lone Ranger and Yellow Man and them back in those days, you know, no plane can't fly without an engine and no bird can't fly without a one wing. We tell you this, the one that keep you rocking and swing. That's where that whole thing, Hollywood and Coke the Rock, that's where they got that thing from. So I can't deny the origin of hip hop from the Bronx, because everything Daddy-O does comes out of that Bronx set. It doesn't come out of what DJ Jones did, what Flowers did, even what the Disco Twins did. Now, Sweetie G and them have a whole nother, they got a whole nother thing. They believe that they were there first, and that's on them. You know what I'm saying? I mean, maybe they were. Like I said, I'm only 85% sure. But I do know that I can't credit them for me.
Right.
I can't credit them for me, because I tell everybody this, and I told him this, and he didn't believe me at first, but then he did. I am Little Rodney C of the Funky 4 Plus One More.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
Who Daddy-O is. That's who Daddy-O is. Okay, Rodney C was what I wanted to be. It's who I mimicked. Later on, Mel, because Mel's the greatest to ever do it. But later on, Mel, but Rodney C, when he did that, another MC, when he's running down rhymes, but half the time he just running down mine. But that's okay, because I know someday I'll put him in check and take his rep away. I said, I want to do that.
Yes.
Mr. Joy.
No doubt.
You know what I'm saying? And I did that, but I did it with grit in my voice and a lot of meanness in my lyrics and all of that. And so when I saw Rodney, see, this years ago, I saw him. I said, man, I'm you. And he said, Daddy, you're not me. You almost screaming on records. Like, you know what I'm saying? I said, Rodney, go back and listen again, man. Next time he seen me, which is like maybe 2 years later, he said, man, Daddy, I hear what you're saying. I said, yeah, man, I'm you. Like, I'm you all the way. A little KK Rockwell, but a lot of Rodney C. So I cannot credit them for who I am. I don't know if the running argument is Flash and them got their stuff from them, but it almost doesn't feel like that either.
Yeah, I thought the running argument seemed to be that they would be fine with taking the, you know, pre-hip-hop credit. I think the argument was of they didn't get any credit, and I think in a way maybe I'm sort of agreeing with them, because I like to be a historian. I love the history, so the fact that I didn't know about them, you know, it's sort of like, man, hip-hop, you know, we, you know, unlike, like, let's say disco or club cats, they take care of their legacy. They take care. I know about all those guys. But we really didn't. So I think
like we dropped the ball on that.
Right.
Where the earlier hip hop cats didn't mention Flowers in them. That was before them.
Okay. So that's one way to look at it. Here's the other way. What the hell did they do to make themselves known? Because Flash got out there.
That's real.
That's true.
That's real. Yeah.
You understand what I'm trying to say? So that's the Daddy-O argument. The Daddy-O argument is, it's always artist-based for me. Like, even when I was doing A&R, you know, people would want me, and I was, you know, I was pro-artist all the way, but people would want me to, when they began to start barfing on the record company and stuff like that, they would kind of want me to side with them, and I would say, hold up, wait a minute, what are you doing?
Mm. Yeah.
Because I don't have, you know what I'm saying, it's no different than my children. My children come in and tell me that they had some issue. So, well, what did you do? Yeah. And they looking at me like, oh, it wasn't me. It was you involved. You played something. You putting yourself in the 100% victim box? Because I don't know if this, besides for child trafficking and a couple other things, there's no real 100% victim box.
You definitely had to play a part.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. I appreciate the documentary. I just was talking to somebody about it 2 days ago and saying that, you know, I would do my due diligence and my piece and just promoting it and helping people to know about it, because I think that's where you guys are coming from. I do think it's something, you know, if you could put any other documentary on blast, and on blast means whatever it means. If that means BET or Revolt, then that's what it means. But if you can make any other documentary seen, then that documentary should be seen as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
No, definitely. I think everybody should see it. No doubt. Indeed. I think it's an excellent documentary.
So
briefly, you know, you certainly addressed the Grandmaster Flash. Speaking of Flash, the Melly Mel and that whole situation, which is quite disappointing from our standpoint, at least from our generation. It seems to me, you know, you come from a band of a lot of guys, you know. Can you speak to what could be the friction, other than obviously maybe it's money, but you come from a band with a lot of guys, Grandmaster Flash, obviously, in the Furious Five. That's a lot of guys. Can you sort of speak to maybe what, you know, other than money, or is it just money?
Oh, well, I got the whole, you know, so since I put that video out, of course, you know, now I got the full story, which, I mean, I ain't gonna do no another video, because I think I did what I was supposed to do, right? Which is, one, Melly Mel came back and retracted his statement. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Nah, I didn't
see
that.
But he came back.
Do you think he really retracted, much, though?
Yeah, it feels like it. It really does feel like it. He knows. I stomped him on calling Flash Milli Vanilli and a fraud. And okay. So that was where I was at. Like, that's where I was at. Like, you can't do that to Flash, yo. I don't care what kind of beef you got with Flash. For the most of your life, Grandmaster Flash was the sole source of your music. Now, you want to talk about Sylvia and them getting, you know, LeBlanc and Wimbush and them to play behind you and skipping them to play behind you, then that's a whole nother talking. But I pretty much delved it all out. And honestly, I'm glad I did the piece I did, even though you guys are getting this, and this is the first time I ever said this publicly. Even though I did the piece I did, I'm glad I didn't do the entire truth, because it's really ugly. And so here it is. Do you guys, at least one of you guys, are old enough to know? Do you know why we have a Ray Goodman in Brown?
Do you know why we have them?
Yeah, why do we have a Ray Goodman in Brown? Why do we have Ray Goodman in Brown?
Sound like we about to get some good info on why.
Yeah, I
because
couldn't.
Sylvia Robinson wouldn't let them take the name The Moments.
Okay. I was just thinking about The Moments. Okay, not right.
Off of her label.
I got you.
Okay. Okay. So now here's the second step. The second step is the Sugar Hill Gang, and I'm sure y'all at least seen this. The Sugar Hill Gang, about a year ago, maybe a little longer, did a movie called I Want My Name Back, right?
Yeah.
You saw this piece, right?
I saw that. Yep. I saw it.
That was also Sylvia Robinson owning the name
of the Sugar Hill Gang. Correct.
And not allowing...
Right. Didn't allow them to get the name.
Mike.
Right.
And Master G to use the name.
Correct.
This whole issue... about, you know, that surrounding the piece that I saw with the video is right. All the person behind it is Joey Robinson Jr. It's because Hank is dead. He has no more Sugar Hill Gang. He owns the name the Sugar Hill Gang. He wants to own the name Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. If you look in the new video, you see Joey in there right there with him. Two years ago, Joey was touring with them, and he wants to tour as Grandmaster Melly Mel and the Furious Five, and he wants to try to bring some of that Sugar Hill Gang stuff in there. It's all about Joey owning the name of the Furious Five.
I'll be damned.
He is the ghost of Sylvia Robinson. And I don't let you like to speak ill of the dead, but it's just the true of the dead. Sylvia has always been a person of whole names. I grew up on The Moments. I grew up on Love is on the Two-Way Street and all of those songs. Right. And when they came out as Ray Goodman and Brown, it was just like, well, I hear you, but what happened to The Moments? You know what I'm saying? And it was because Sylvia wouldn't let them hold their name. So for years, this has been the Sugar Hill, this has been the Robinson's family's technique, and this is exactly what they're doing. And, you know, Mel and Scorp just got caught up into it, which I blame them for it. I blame them for being dumb enough to even get caught up into that. Since that happened, so I kind of posted it in two places. It worked out kind of cool. I posted on my personal Facebook page, but I also posted on my Professor Daddio page. When I did on my Professor Daddio page, I got a lot of rebuttal from guys that's working with the Furious Five. Wow. The kid Barshawn, that's actually the third MC with Mel and Scorp that hangs out. Scorpio's other brother, Eugene, and they going at me, but I went at them. I mean, I went at them until they just stopped talking, right? Because, I mean, come on, you can't keep going at. What I learned is that these guys, and this is what I told these guys, this is what I wanted to say. I told these guys, Melly Mel is the greatest MC that ever lived. And if any, I fight anybody that tell me any different. Like, I'll fight over Mel, like, being the greatest, right? Because he's always been the greatest. And you know, that's, there's been other guys that's come and done some things, but not that, right? So when you got that, and you the greatest MC in the world, okay, so you the greatest MC in the world, especially at the time that I'm thinking you really kind of turn, you know, really was clear that you was the greatest, and you choose to make a record with somebody other than your group. You're the greatest MC in the world, and you choose to make what would end up being the greatest rap record in the world with a guy named Duke Booty.
Right.
Not only do you choose to do that, you choose to actually say, okay, Sylvia, I'll put Grandmaster before my name. Melly Mel has never been Grandmaster Melly Mel. Hmm. We only got one MC that's ever used Grandmaster, and that's Kaz, because Kaz was the DJ first.
Right.
Right.
So he just came in as Grandmaster. He was always Grandmaster Kaz.
Right.
So I got to say, I got to say you putting it together really well now that the Sugar Hill element, and I hadn't even thought about that. You know, it's almost like hitting somebody over the head with a brick. It's like, wow, now you see, you know, and wow, that's incredible. It's incredible. I guess I find it incredible as long as those guys have been, you know, in the industry, in the music situation, that they would allow, you know, representatives from that label, you know, to still be a factor. You know, I just right. find that incredible.
Exactly.
So, well, you know, somebody, I mean, I don't care who you are, somebody put a little bit of money in front of your face or talk money to you or make you feel like you ain't getting what you should have gotten, whether it's money or fame or props or whatever, then, you know, if you are, and I'm going to say, weak-minded enough to fall for it, then this is what we're going to get.
Absolutely. And the sad say is, you know, you ask a question about money. So, you know, the real answer is, yes, it is about money. The real answer is that, you know, and I am no, you know, and this is what I want to, you know, because my boy is talking about, oh, I want your kids. I don't even know if it's even necessary for me to get on the phone with Mel and them now. But, you know, a couple of days ago when this thing took off and went viral, my boy was like, oh, maybe you should get on the phone with them. And I was like, I'm willing to get on the phone with them. But what I want to say to them is that I am no stranger to economic hardship at all. You have no idea. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like most of us, right? Like right. most of us in that time. Run's a little lucky, but Run ran into a little situation too. But then Russell was already peaking. So it's real easy if you got that kind of brother that could just throw you $300,000, $400,000, say, get back on your feet.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But none of us are strangers, not me, not Jalil, not Chuck D. None of us are strangers to economic hardship. But you don't have to, first of all, you don't, here's one of the things I'm saying. I don't mind rhyming, I love it. I'm sitting on two albums right now. Ain't nobody ever heard them. One I did with Tommy Boy that they actually gave me back because they said, we don't know what to do with this because it was so revolutionary. They was like, we're not even thinking about putting this out. Call the Old Dad, the Gun, and the Children. That's just a straight Malcolm X record, right? Yeah. And then another one that I've been making called Everybody But KRS, which is one I started making when I was 50. I just started, you know, like, not rhyming again, but like, okay, you're a half a century old. What do you sound like? What would you talk about? And so I got about 11 songs on that finish. I don't really care if those things ever come out. I listen to them because they make me happy that I'm still rhyming. But my point is, you don't have to rhyme to eat. And if you if that just becomes something that Drake does or Quan does or Migos does, you should be okay with it. I mean, you really should be okay with it. Guys in sports like Reggie Miller ain't never gonna pick up the, you know, basketball again. They might play an old folks tournament or something, but they never really gonna pick up the basketball again.
Right.
That's real.
They become announcers. They do all kinds of stuff. And so, you know, look at Chuck. I mean, Chuck does things with Public Enemy because there's a desire for Public Enemy out there, and Chuck don't want to disappoint. He's so fan oriented, it's ridiculous, right? That he just don't want to disappoint the fans. Chuck feels like he would be just letting everybody down if he goes, "I retire."
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? But in the same token, he's lecturing. You know, he you know, Spit Digital is taking off. The Hip Hop Gods thing is happening. I mean, he's doing other things for streams of income.
Right.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, you know, you don't have to just do that. I mean, you know, honestly, the way it looks, Mel ain't got no other stream of income. And to me, that's kind of whack.
Well, it is.
Well, it's whack. That's on so many levels. It's whack because you're right. That shouldn't be his only stream of income.
Because he's such a god in the game that he should have all kinds of streams coming in.
But his entire legacy is what it is. You know, you're not going to come out now, you know, and try to erase or rewrite what is already set in history. You know,
right.
Somebody goes to a record store, a used record store, and they buy a Grandmaster Flash and the Furious 5 album. That's what they're going to buy. There's not another re-edited version out there. So
it's true. And I mean, on top of that, like I told him, I said, why isn't Melly Mel writing a book called The Greatest MC of All Time?
He could do it.
He could.
Lecturing and touring on that for a minute. You know what I'm saying? And then while he's doing that, you get with Pharrell I can mention five producers that I know, if they took their time, could make a Melly Mel album that you'd be like, holy shit, this is crazy. You know what I'm saying? This is my issue. Who the hell is going to say no to Mel? Who? Pharrell's not going to say no. CeeLo wouldn't say no. R. Kelly wouldn't say no.
Dr. L. LA might say no.
I don't think Dre would say no. But on top of that, you almost don't need Dre, because almost everybody that made beats for Dre ain't in the camp no more.
Right.
Like, I know the new guys in the camp because one of them live here. He my man. Art director. He out there with them right now. So I'm just saying, I mean, ain't nobody going to say no to Mel.
Well, I think that again, you know, but, I mean, maybe, I'm just saying, maybe unlike, you know, somebody like yourself, I mean, we interview a lot of guys, and a lot of guys, you know, really, because they were there, they're historians, you know, what you need is Mel's perspective from a historical situation, so we don't have gaps in our history. So we don't have somebody like myself saying, well, damn, I should have known about all the new sounds. I should have known about all of this prior, you know. I mean, I knew a little bit about Flash, and I certainly knew about DJ Hollywood, but for me, not from New York, I should have known more than that. And people like yourself, people like Melly Mel, KRS, I don't care who it is, need to be more, I think, pro-historian so we don't lose gaps in our history.
Right. I agree.
Well, look, we got to get ready to wrap it up soon, but I got a couple of questions from some of our listeners, and then I wanted to ask you a question first, and that is,
okay,
do you think that Stetsasonic has gotten the just due as for what you did in the hip-hop history?
I don't think yet, but I don't think time is going to end any... I mean, unless God decide, I don't think the world's going to end no time soon, so... I guess in that old school, it's not over to the Fat Lady Sings kind of thing. I think that there's room for Stetsasonic to be appreciated. I look at us like I look at Funkadelic. There was somebody else I used. I can't remember who it was. But Funkadelic is definitely a great example. The way people look at Funkadelic today is not the way people looked at Funkadelic 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, 30 years ago, they had core fans that was way into what they was doing. But from the outside, you know, there was so much other stuff going on. It was like, oh, this is just one of those bands. They make some kind of cool little funk thing. And they might have even been equal in that day and time to the Brothers Johnson and Confunction and some of those other bands. 30 years later, Funkadelic is the funk gods. And nobody compares to George Clinton now. So I think it's the same flow for Stet. I don't think that we are easy, digestible thing. We didn't make simple records. You know, we did a lot of complicated, not only complicated rhyme schemes, but complicated musical things and all of that. And then you had all of these great, what I call great, because we're all weirdos in our own right. Like, every single one of us are weirdos in our own right. And so you got all of this weird energy coming together in this one band, putting these little things together. One guy might add one little blinkle. I mean, you know, look at it. Fruquan did the beat for Sally, and he did that when none of us was in the studio.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. We just came back, and he had that boom. And then Paul said, oh, give me. And he got his turntables and went, 1, 2, 3, 4, get it. You know, you know what I'm saying? It was a whole, Sally wasn't even a real record. It was something I was doing where I was taking every breakbeat that we used back in the day that had vocals in it. The children playing, women producing was part of it. Like, yeah. All of these breakbeats that had words in it. And then that Sally piece stood out. I said, man, I'm moving all of this. We're just going to write a song about Sally. And D was like, you sure? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And then I let them hear my verse. And they was like, oh, that's cool. I could do something like that too. You know what I'm saying? So, like, so we put it all together. There's intricacy in all of that. And it's not always the easiest digestible thing. So I guess that's a long ass answer to say, no, I don't think that we have to this point, but yes, I think as time goes on, each year we get more and more pop. Each year I hear somebody else from a decent perspective say, yo, man, y'all was crazy. You know what I'm saying? Where, you know, I wasn't getting that. Like, social media helps a lot. You know what I'm saying? All of that. So I do think that as time goes on, people will realize. And, you know, and the influences. Like Chuck will tell you, oh, the best show I ever saw was Stet and Amsterdam. And, you know, I helped him formulate that whole Takes a Nation album. And, you know what I'm saying? People don't know about us behind the scenes and all that. You know, Paul's effect on Big Daddy Kane and Light. And, you know, all of those particular things. So I think as time goes on, people will respect us more.
No doubt. All right, so we got a question from Volgari Black. He asked, he'd like to hear your take on the art of sampling in the present day versus the golden era of hip-hop.
Real simple. When I do my lectures, I say this. People say, oh, what's the difference between then and now? That's what they always ask me. Back in the day, we borrowed the music and had original lyrics. Now, they borrow lyrics and have original music. We are no more, meaning us as hip hop musicians, I'm gonna say that. As hip hop musicians, we are no more than two turntables and a microphone. It's the way we were made.
Yes.
So, you know, you could throw all of that, and I'm no disrespect, Lil Jon, my man, but you could throw all that Lil Jon Swiss Beat stuff in the garbage. Even the best Kanye records have samples in them. That's who we are. I mean, it's just who we are. It's because we were an art form that was born out of speaking on top of records rhythmically, and DJs backspinning 3-second pieces of, you know, of full records.
100.
And so, you know, that's, I mean, you know, I wish we could get that. What happens? Record companies kind of destroyed that. cats start going and get signed, and then you hear the A&R guy say, it's no samples, right? Because they don't want to get sued or whatever. And all they got to do is just pay for it. But, I'm a sample-based producer myself, so I don't even, half the time, I can't even stomach rap without samples.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
100. I'm sorry.
All right, and then last question from our listeners. Our man from Canada, Mr. Merv, he's asking, as a senior director, according to Wiki, what was some of your roles and responsibilities at MCA? And what were some of your favorite acts?
Well, I guess my favorite thing we did was the New Edition Home album, right? Which I still think stands pretty much neck and neck with any great New Edition album. And, you know, of course, we had Bobby back, so we had all six of them. But, you know, the responsibilities varied. I mean, you know, one of the larger things that I did when I was there is I used to always say I initiated the house that Doug built. When I first got to MCA, Doug Morris wasn't there, so Universal Records wasn't there. And what ended up happening was we kept missing release dates. So when I first got there, and I'm doing A&R, I noticed we kept missing release dates. So every time we end up doing a staff meeting, it's like, oh, we got to push this record back. We got to do this. So one day I pulled a girl, Alicia, to the side, the A&R administrator in L.A. I said, Alicia, why do we miss so many release dates? And she said, because people don't have their paperwork in. I said, what do you mean? She says, well, if there's a sample clearance to be done, sometimes they don't do that. A lot of times we just got to submit lyric sheets just to have lyric sheets all the way through. They don't even write their lyrics out, so we're late on that. Sometimes the writer's agreements, you know, don't come in. Just different things, you know, W-2s, W-9s, one, you know, all this stuff doesn't go. I said, so you don't have a book? And she said, what do you mean? I said, you don't have a book that when an artist comes in, you hand them the book and say, your record is not coming out until this is done. She said, no, but I'll make one. So she made that book, and Universal Records used my book for everything for Cash Money on down.
Wow.
That's incredible.
So, you know, so that's the kind of person I was. That wasn't something assigned to me. That was just, you know, looking at it, it just made sense, because why would you just keep, you know, I always know with these artists, artists are so temperamental. You got to tell them everything up front. You know, if you spring things on them, they're going to spring something back on you. You know what I'm saying? So you got to tell them everything up front. So I just thought it would make sense. So, you know, doing that, doing the typical kind of A&R stuff, you know, listening to records. Like one of the things I did is I'm the first person to offer Master P a deal. I didn't get the deal because at the time, not my boss, but his boss's boss was like, he had Ice Cream Man on charts and they just didn't want to sign him.
Wow.
And they was like, Daddy-O, he's going to use this money to promote the record he has on the charts. And I was like, what do you care? We got the next five albums, but they didn't listen. So P just came to me, and he's still my man to this day. He just came to me and said, Daddy-O, you my man, but your people are crazy. And he went to, you know, he just went somewhere else. So, you know, I was finding that stuff. I found that Mystical record when it was on Big Boy Records. I really wanted to sign him. They was too slow on that. I found that Smooth the Hustler record because me and Foxy was mad cool. And she brought me, you know, them guys are like her brothers. You know, they not her physical brothers, but they like her brothers. They raised Foxy. And I, you know, I started Foxy and Kim. So Foxy brought me that Broken Language record. I was like, oh man, this is crazy. But my people moved too slow, and they just went to Profile and did the deal. So, you know, it was that kind of stuff. You know, some of that stuff was a little frustrating because there was stuff that I wanted to do that I just couldn't do, you know, quick enough. And you know, that's just some of the stuff that goes with A&R.
No doubt, no doubt. Well, it has been an honor, sir. And
definitely.
Is there anything that you want to close out with? You want to tell folks what you're doing, what you got coming up, anything?
Well, I mean, you could just, you know, you could always stay tuned to the site. I mean, I believe in just shipping and doing the updates later, because I've been in this digital space so long. So I got the Professor Daddy-O site up, but I I shortened the professor just because I know a lot of people be using the E where they ain't supposed to be and O's where they ain't supposed to be. So it's just profdaddio.com. It's up there. It's mostly video stuff at this point, but I'm going to move all my written blogs over there and do some other stuff. In the next couple of weeks, I have this art dev clinic site up because I've been doing artist development for the last 15 years, but I never really did it. I've been doing it individually, but I never really did it as a business set. So I'm actually getting ready to set the clinic up. So the art dev clinic should be up pretty soon. And I'm still looking for opportunities to speak in schools and stuff like that. Still looking for opportunities to DJ, you know. So, you know, trying to come to DC, hint, hint, you know what I'm saying? So.
That's what's good, no doubt. Thank you very much, man. That was a pleasure. I learned a lot, I'm gonna tell you that.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the book.
I'm working on that as we speak, man. I'm really trying to pull that together, and it's just, you know, it's all my perspective, but you know what I'm saying, I think it could read well. I mean, I'm gonna use editors, you know, I just lip off, so I'm gonna definitely use editors to make it gel.
Oh, hey, but like I said, it, you know,
just you sitting just here listening to you, bro. Just sitting here, yeah, I can listen to you all day.
I could see your book and me just totally being enthralled. So when it dropped, I'm buying it. There's no doubt.
All right, I appreciate that, bro. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right, man, and I appreciate Kedar. I don't know how you met him, but that's my man down there, and I'm glad that he put me in contact with you, man. It's great.
Oh yeah, that's my brother from another mother, man. You know.
No doubt.
So, you know, that's a young music guy that's going to always be a music guy. You know, he's such a purist. It almost stings.
Right.
You know, right. We need to loosen him up a
Yeah, we be trying.
Bit, you know what I'm saying?
We try.
Because he is a purist. He hates everything.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I read his post every day.
Yeah, he hates everything. But he's good. He good people, though.
Yeah, that's my brother, too, man.
All right, brother. Yeah. Good night.
All right, well, you have a great weekend. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Thank you, sir. And I'll let you know when the
link
is up so you can share it with all your folks.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, man. And talk to you guys soon.
Done deal.
All right.
Peace.
Peace.
Good night.